Welcome to episode 331 of Fly Away. Here at Outlander Travel, we're passionate about, well, travel. Throughout the years, we've seen many changes to the industry, but one thing that has stayed the same is the urge to explore our world and make connections that can only be made through experience. My name is Laura, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy, Lindsay, Donna, and George. Rob Keane and Jeremy Clement are co-founders at Project Expedition, a platform where travel advisors can book over 20,000 tours. That's right, 20,000. And excursions and destinations around the world. Based in New York City, Rob currently leads the sales, business development, and technology, and Jeremy currently leads the customer experience and marketing teams. Previously, they both spent 7 years at Bloomberg. Speaking from personal experience, Project Expedition offers a wide variety of tours for every taste, and I believe they're the cream of the crop. They're great to work with, and that's why we invited them both here today. So let's get started. Welcome, Rob and Jeremy. So, you know, kind of first off, people are not doing as much international travel right now, but we are seeing an upsurge in domestic travel. How did your business shift when that began to happen?
Great question. Making me relive 2020. So yeah, it was. Obviously March, April, May. It was like a tidal wave of shutdown, and then it was very eerily quiet. Let's say for those few months, and then we started to see things trickling in June, July, August, basically summer months. And trickling in was basically just domestic. And it was close to home, in line with kind of what we were reading from other companies, what we were seeing in the press, people that were kind of locked up for the 3 long months and just wanted to venture out and do something close to home. So we started seeing some things coming in then, but mainly on the destinations where we already had products. So a bit of Florida, Jackson Hole, and a little bit in the Southeast as well. Just on our side, we went through the same kind of pains as a lot of companies. Those 3 months were just all about refunds and cancellations. And then it was only about June where we got our heads above water and start thinking, right, what do we do? How do we react? How do we go forward from here? And that's when we started thinking, right, domestic expansion. We need to double down on that. That really didn't start till June or July. My journey, so I think it was about then.
I guess it was about late May when things started to slow down enough where we liquidated basically all of our bookings, issued millions of dollars in refunds, and started thinking about kind of where travel would take a turn next. I guess as we started to kind of like really pivot, we had a big focus on outdoor things, a lot of national park type tours, a lot of water-based activities like catamaran sailing in Key West and things like that we started to get a lot of requests for. We started to see bookings of existing tours. But things, you know, typical, I guess, of, you know, COVID consciousness, things that were outdoors, kind of you could possibly get away from people, do it privately or small group, like those ended up being kind of the niche focus groups within the domestic expansion strategy.
I want to just stop for a second and thank you guys for being so good about your refunds.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. I had that situation and you guys were seamless and easy, and I appreciate that. So thank you.
Well, and for our audience, that's important too. Yeah. A lot of people worry now about not getting back, you know, not getting back those, their investment that way. It's one of the many reasons that we've kind of, you know, put Project Expedition, you know, as travel agents, that we hold them in such high regard is because they're of their integrity and their willingness to take the hit themselves, to not put themselves first, but to, you know.
We appreciate that. I mean, it's been kind of, I guess, as surprising for us as it has been for you and your clients, just in terms of just the companies that stopped giving refunds or only started giving credits. And, you know, if we were to put our position, put ourselves in the shoes of our clients, rather, we wouldn't be happy with that. So it was just never an option for us. Like, it's always been, I think almost every refund was turned around in 24 to 48 hours since March 12th or 13th, when this chaos kind of kicked off. So yeah, we're still honoring all of our cancellation policies on the site as they're listed. And anytime there's some kind of exception, our policy is to just to work with our local partners and see if an exception can be made and we can give a refund even outside of the terms. So, but we appreciate that you've acknowledged that.
Yeah. Thank you.
And coordinating some more domestic tours, did you find any that you were like surprised about or that you yourselves were thinking, you know, when we have time, I'd really love to go and do that.
Oh, there's quite a lot. I've been to Jackson Hole, but I haven't done the rafting. We get a lot of requests to do whitewater rafting at Jackson. It's one thing I'd love to go back and do. It's a lot of fun. There's some just outdoorsy things up in Alaska that we've added. Admittedly, it hasn't been selling right now, but it will sell. I'm quite excited to get out and to see some of the scenery up there. Just it's absolutely spectacular. I've never been to Alaska. But just as we've gone board with some of those tours, I'd love to go up and then do those. I think it's been quite interesting the last 6 months because we've learned a lot about the domestic landscape as well. We were always selling it, but it was a minor part of what we were selling. Now it's obviously a major part. But we went through a bit of a learning process. Like we had to research all where the top places. I mean, 2019, we had the typical New York's, San Francisco's. But in 2020, that stuff wasn't selling at all. Portland still isn't. So we've had to kind of learn a lot of these new places. And I think the same happened on the advisor side as well. We learned often just from hearing feedback, advisors would come to us and say, well, I've got clients that are interested in going here, or I've read about this location, and that was helping drive our strategy as well. But it's been really interesting. And the domestic product, I think we've now got over 2,500 products. We have about 1,000 going into 2020. So that's a huge, huge increase. But as you know, the US is big. There's a lot of places, and there's new destinations we're hearing about kind of even this year that we're now adding and working on. And as kind of our clients know, our expansion strategy is really just built around feedback. We expanded into Europe based on feedback. We have tours in Europe based on feedback, and we're really just doing that but here. So that's what we're selling. So yeah, there's a lot of places we'd like to go. Just wait for things to start opening up a bit.
Well, one of the webinars that I was on, the person talked about putting hope on the calendar, you know, as we move forward with our clients is, you know, whether we're scheduling for 21 or 22 or 23, you know, put hope on the calendar so they can look out. So as we're doing that, and people are, you know, allowed to travel again, what are one or two of your favorites that you've been able to experience in terms of international destinations and tours you got to do there?
I was going to say, fortunately, I snuck in a trip to Iceland in February 2020, which the timing now was perfect because that was my last trip. But I did an overnight tour out of Reykjavik, and one of the days was going up the glacier, like hiking with like the grandpas on, and we got all the sticks and all the gear. But that was just amazing fun. We went up there kind of in the evening, blue sky, and we kind of watched the sunset. Come down as we were kind of walking down that glacier, and then the next day we went out and did snowmobiling around the glacier. That was a lot of fun. And
where did you stay for that tour?
Good question. About 5 hours east of Reykjavik. It wasn't really a town; okay. It was just a hotel. One of the hotel chains up there, really nice. And then we could see the northern lights because we were lived outside the city. So that was just an incredible experience. It's just one of those things that. On my own, I'd never be able to figure out, like, okay, if I want to come up a glacier, okay, what do I need? What equipment do I need? What's the licensing I need to get, perhaps, just to access the park? But literally, that entire experience of climbing up a glacier and snowmobiling was just booking a tour on Project Expedition, as simple as that, and it was, like, fantastic. They guide you all through it, they keep you all calm, they kind of, they get the fact that, I mean, I've flown out of New York City, couldn't be kind of further away from a glacier than that, and just kind of walk you all through it, guide you through it, and it's just before you know it, you're climbing up like an ice sheet, and it's incredible. That was a great memory, and the time he was lucky doing it in February 2020.
What about you, Jeremy?
Yeah, I guess the list is pretty long. I'd say for me, you know, like, I guess it's a kind of long list. Going back pre-pandemic, my wife and I went to Bali for a honeymoon and worked with some of the partners there. I checked them out, and everything from just airport transfers to private. We did a bunch of private tours around the island, which were pretty awesome. Most recently, I guess, kind of about the same time that Rob was in Iceland. Right before that, I went to Paris. I've been to Paris, I don't know, countless times almost at this point, but I did want to try out a few of the operators we were working with there that had been quite popular. One of them was Context. I don't know if you're aware of them, but most of their guides have a advanced degree, master's or PhD in whatever kind of type of tour or subject matter that they're guiding. So I did a tour of the Louvre with a professor from the Sorbonne, an art history professor. So it was just a super fantastic kind of perspective of a museum that I had actually been to in the past, but like I had a completely new and totally kind of like different experience of a place that I had once been. So it was quite cool kind of having that just really kind of eye-opening, almost like revelation of a place, a city that I had been to several times, a museum that I had been to before. And it just really kind of gave me perspective of like the value that a tour guide can bring to a certain place, just both with the information and the story and the presentation. So it kind of encouraged me. I think, you know, at some point I want to do even some tours of kind of our home city, New York City, and just learn more about where I live. I mean, I even follow a few like Instagram accounts that are just like all old history of New York City, because it's just kind of interesting to get that type of perspective on a place.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that one up, because I don't know if you remember, but I was using you guys to plan a trip for a couple and their daughter to Paris, and I called you about that tour. Yeah. And you said, "Oh, we just got back. He was awesome." It was awesome. So I'm really glad.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Wasn't it, Laura? Paris trip? I remember the first time you called us up, it was one of the early days of the company. You called up and you talked for an hour and you booked the Paris tour at the end of the phone call.
Yep. Me or Donna?
It was you.
Me, yeah. Yeah, but this one was a family that their daughter is very interested in art. Okay. And so I was talking, because you guys were helping me do, I think it was, they were combining the Musée d'Orsay and Musée d'Orange, and we were trying to get them to do a private guide with both.
Oh yeah, I remember that one.
And yeah. Remember? And that you said, oh my gosh, Context is great.
You could walk between the two museums, I think it was.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and how we would make it all work and everything. But what are you guys, in terms of, you know, the offerings that you have, are you finding what people are most interested in? Is it historical, adventure, food and beverage? What do you find your most popular
things? It's tough to say. I guess the most popular, just having such kind of a wide breadth of things. So as you opened up with, we have over 20,000 tours now, which is a kind of a recent milestone. So we're excited to hear that kind of be repeated back to us. But yeah, it's such a wide variety. I mean, I would say just more specific than activities, we're seeing a whole lot more interest in private tours. So obviously, I think that's just a concern that's coming out of COVID. So obviously in small groups as well. But lots of, I would say recently, particularly in the colder months, tons of catamarans. I've never seen so many private yacht charter requests ever. And that's mostly been Cancun, Riviera Maya, Key West areas. Prior to that, Rob mentioned like over the summer, Jackson Hole, Yellowstone, Grand Canyon, all the national parks. So everything from private guided tours to small group, that sort of thing. So a lot of just outdoor, open air, nature based activities. But historically, just lots of interest in food tours, kind of unique kind of aspects of culture and that sort of thing. But I don't know. What are your thoughts, Rob? Anything I missed?
Yeah, I guess it's, I mean, right now, outdoors is kind of is what's grabbing. If it's a sailing charter out of Key West, if it's kind of in Hawaii, doing kind of something on an ATV going around the ranch. It's a bit more on that side of things. If you look at kind of 2019 typical sales, it was more city based, and then within a city, it would be kind of a private walking tour of the city and the museum. In Paris, all the museums we talked about, and then maybe going up the Eiffel Tower. And also getting into food tasting, that was really, really popular in 2019. So kind of in a city, then going maybe for a market with the actual chef, and going and cooking those ingredients. Those were all very, very popular. In the world we're living in now, it's really the destination driving it. So the only international destination we're seeing any sales in uniquely is Mexico. And obviously that's very outdoorsy. It's new ruins for the history, but you've got the activities of the ATV and the climbing, and then you've got really fun water activities, snorkeling, sailing, sunset cruises. And then on the continental US, you kind of see the same thing as well. So we're curious. I mean, that's what the trend is now. Ask us in 6 months' time, I think it'll be very, very different. It really, the destination does drive it. So the destination that we're selling now is kind of what we can really see the trends.
Can you talk a little bit more about what chartering the private charters are like? Like, say you wanted to have maybe your family or a small group in Key West.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yes, I mean, I guess in general, it's just good to know that kind of at Project Expedition, we will do our best to make anything private. So if you see a group tour or a small group tour and you or your clients would like to do it privately, all you need to do is ask. We partner directly with every local tour operator on our site. We're not working with like tons of other big aggregators. So we have relationships with the people on the ground, which gives us a lot more flexibility and control over the experience. So that's kind of, you know, first and foremost, something to know that if you don't see something private, just ask, and it's more than likely that we can get a custom quote for you. With the yacht charters, and a lot of the destinations, we do have private options just available to book kind of off the shelf. Mm-hmm. The yachts are only sold on a private basis. But that's particularly in like Riviera Maya, we launched a new company only a couple of months ago, and they've been booked many, many times, and everything from like 36 foot catamaran to like a 59 foot like luxury motor yacht, and several different types of boats in between. They have a private chef on board. So those are like very high end luxury experiences. In Cabo,
Just for a day, or is it for several days?
Just for a day. Yeah, these are mostly day trips. They do offer overnight experiences. In Cabo, like we have a bit more common for people to ask for, at least what we've been seeing, like group quotes for like a group charter. And then we actually are selling like public group charters, and we just will contract with the operator to take that boat offline and charter it like just fully on a private basis. So those kind of function a little bit differently, but just, you know, with the request, we're able to kind of turn that around and make it happen.
So for a yacht charter, how many people is that usually if you want to make it private?
So, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, we see kind of all types of clientele. So, mm-hmm. You know, most interestingly, we had the same clients book a yacht charter, just two people, him and his wife in Riviera Maya, Mexico. They loved it. Then they flew to Costa Rica like 2 weeks later, and they got a quote on a catamaran charter private there. And then they flew back to Mexico. So I think these people were, you know, quite frankly, making the most of the ability to work remotely. And they were looking for a yacht charter in every destination that they went. So that was two people. But we've done charters as far as up to like 70 to 100 people, depending on the size of the boat. Wow. So some of the catamarans in some destinations are huge, and they can hold a lot of people.
Okay. So if you had a group of like four couples, that's no problem.
Not a problem at all. Okay. Yeah. I would say the majority of the boats, particularly in Mexico, Cancun, Riviera Maya, max out about 20 to 24 passengers is average.
Cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You also do the big fishing, if somebody wants a fishing charter as well?
We do have a lot of fishing charters.
Because the ones I mean, I've looked at usually max like eight people, but we're talking like 20 or 30.
Good question. I think a lot of the ones in Florida we have don't go to that high. I think they bring in multiple boats. Cancun and Riviera Maya were actually onboarding some fishing tours right at the moment, so we don't have them now. I don't think we have them up to that group size. They do generally 20 people fishing.
No, yeah. I mean, capacity wise, your deep sea fishing is always going to max at like 6 to 8 people. Just you can't have that many people fishing at one time. Usually only have like maybe 2 or 3 lines in the water. It's just, if you ever go deep sea fishing, it's, if you get kind of like a 300 pound fish on the end of a rod, everything turns into chaos. So yeah, usually for the fishing charters, those are going to, yeah, it's fun. I recommend it. If you catch something, it cannot be fun if you don't catch anything. But it's, yeah, so you'll find that those charters are usually limited to far fewer people. But if you're just sailing, snorkeling, cruising, sunset cruise, dinner cruise, we can fit way more people.
Gotcha. Good to know.
Yeah, I had clients who did one of your deep sea fishing in Cabo, and they onboarded a seal who wanted the fish that they were throwing out for them.
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
I remember that photo you sent.
Yeah, that same client, we did something off of Norfolk, and this was before you guys were doing Norfolk, but he brought in he got it to the boat, he didn't bring it in, but he brought in a 500-pound marlin.
Wow.
My goodness.
So, you know, you mentioned you know, all these Cancun and Cabo and Costa Rica. How are people doing with getting from the airports to the destinations they're going to? And are you still doing shared transfers? How is that working out?
Transfers. We've been doing transfers for 2 years now. And I feel it's become a really big part of our business. We sort of started testing it out a couple of years ago. We weren't quite sure what it would become. We added that kind of vertical, if you will, because we were getting a lot of feedback from agents saying, well, I put all the tours, but can you just add those on the beginning and the end of the trip? And they're like, sure, sounds great. We weren't necessarily expecting it to become such a big part of the business. So we've done a lot of work to optimize it, particularly around supplier vetting. And we actually only do private transfers. So we stopped doing shared transfers quite quickly, actually. We did them for the first couple of months. Laura, you're usually ahead of the curve, so you may have spotted those early on. But it actually came down to we want to be known for quality for everything we do. And with transfers, there's just a lot of moving parts, as you know, when you make a transfer. Like it's got flight numbers, connecting flights possibly, timings, drop-off points, meeting points, all of that kind of thing. With a tour, it's really just a hotel name and a meeting time, simple. The transfer has got about 6 or 7 data points for people that are wrong. With the shared transfers or the shuttle transfers, you're not necessarily having someone standing with a sign and your name on it. Sometimes clients have to find their own way to a meeting point. And that kind of just extra steps actually became a quality concern. And when we started comparing prices between just joining a shuttle, a shared transfer versus a private, it wasn't all that different. So we decided to stop doing that and just focus in on the private transfers. We felt the pricing was still really competitive. And what's most important to us is the transfers execute successfully, so the quality's up there, and it's just easier to do it with a private transfer.
Yeah, it's one of the things I love about you guys is you handling transfers, because it's people can often say it's a small part of their trip, but it's also a part where if there's going to be a problem, it's usually where we're going to have a problem. And when you're in a country and you're in a country that regardless of where you are, but especially if you're someplace you don't speak the language, and your transfer doesn't show up or is late showing up or says they showed up and you didn't show up and you couldn't navigate it, you know, to have you guys, number one, you know, that we're much more likely to not have those complaints, but when they do, to have you guys help us take care of that and not take the side of the transfer, you know, or whatever, to say, well, he said he was there, and so they're out $450, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
good luck.
Bring up some great points there. And it's, yeah, unfortunately, transfers, they are more likely to go wrong. There's more data points, as I was saying. And even if you have 99% success rate, there's still 1% in there. And if you're peak season and there's hundreds going out, there's 2 or 3 clients that are going to have an issue. And if it's in Europe, that's 3 a.m. in the morning, and that's not pleasant for anyone. We don't want to be dealing with that. We know our clients, you as advisors, definitely don't want to be dealing with that. So it's all in our interest to avoid that happening in the first place. But if it does happen, it's how you deal with it that's really important to us. Like, yeah. And what we love about our business is the relationships we have with travel advisors. We want to build them and grow them for the long term. And that does mean if there are hiccups along the way, we are thinking of the long term. What's the right thing to do in that situation? And it's stressful, particularly when it's 2, 3 a.m. in the morning. Everyone's blaming everyone, and we completely understand that. It's just a case of kind of just solving that issue in as real time as possible. Like, can we quickly get a second driver if someone's stuck in traffic? Can we guide the client to a meeting point? Can we try and connect the two people as quickly as possible? If we can't, then what's the appropriate follow-up? As you're saying, it's not just taking sides in that situation. It's really just initially just trying to diffuse the situation and solve it. And then we'll figure out how to go forward from there.
Yes.
But yeah, it's unfortunate. And it's the nature of the beast, as we all know, working in travel, things will happen. Flights will be delayed. Weather will cause problems. So it really is super important just how you deal with that. Because you guys know, dealing with your clients, managing their expectations, on that side as well. We didn't realize that service would become such a big part of our business. What we would view as just a little thing of like, well, this is what's happened, this is the right way to deal with it. It's the right thing to do. It's kind of become our defining thing. We didn't really expect that early on.
Well, and you know, one of the reasons that I, you know, auditioned for vice president of y'all's fan club pretty early on was the way that you vetted things, you know, that I knew that, you know, I was a social worker for years. So that's kind of, my dad said I came out of the womb a social worker. So I kind of party of one here, you know, I get a little bit overly involved in the life of my clients. And so, and you know, as do well, we care about them. We care about their experience. We care about what they're doing. And to know that when I signed up for a tour with you, I didn't have to worry. In fact, they were going to have a better time than I told them they were going to have. It was going to be a great experience. And to, to have people, you know, I'm going to be 60. So to have people who I'm scheduling for who are my age and sometimes 20 years older than me, not have to worry.
Absolutely.
You know, to be able to send them, you know, through Italy, cook their way through Italy and not worry, because all your pieces are going to fall in place, you know? And so that leads real nicely to one of the next things, you know, we were wondering about, which is how do you find these newer tour operators? How do you vet them? How do you, you know, kind of get the best of the best?
Yeah, I think, a lot of it's just, it's, you know, we rely a lot on just technology and just kind of the internet, you know, if you will. But once you've traveled a lot, which we've done quite a lot of traveling, and we've been to these places and you've done a ton of tours and you've worked with a number of tour operators, over time, you also just kind of get a sense for the business. So it's a lot easier for us to kind of figure out, like where our clients are going and what they want. A lot of that is due in part to advise, you know, travel advisor feedback, client feedback. And then we go and we try to find like the best operators that do those things and the destinations that our clients want. And it just requires a lot of research online. And then that turns into kind of more of a, you know, one-on-one vetting experience, talking to the operators, asking them a lot of questions, understanding how their business works, both just from a tour perspective, a product perspective, looking at client feedback from other resources online about their tours. What do people think about their tours? And then ultimately, a lot of the questions can be quite revealing, even just about like the operational side of things, things like accounting, you know, our commercial agreements, terms, policies. You know, it says a lot when, you know, prices are, you know, much more expensive than the other operators in the neighborhood, and they have a non-refundable cancellation policy, and they want to be paid in advance. And it's like, you know, these things that are just not very client friendly. They kind of suggest that operator might not have a culture of putting the clients first, and that sort of thing. So there's a lot that we can kind of glean in advance of working with an operator, but you know, kind of actual experience speaks louder than anything. So once we do bring an operator online, we are like super, super adamant about tracking all the data points. We track every complaint. We track refunds for every kind of reason. Is it canceled? Was it this tour canceled because of weather? Was it canceled because the supplier canceled it? Was it canceled because the client canceled it? Was it canceled, you know, due to mechanical issues? So we track all these types of things. And over time, we're always auto-calculating scores for every operator. And then we have triggers and alerts and alarms that go off internally. It's like, have we had, you know, two complaints from the same operator in the last 6 months? If so, we need to review them. And if they don't hit our high quality metrics and thresholds, we take them off of the site. So that's kind of like a two-part process there, Laura, is like it's validating who we want to work with, who's good enough to be on our site, and then making sure that like the vetting doesn't necessarily stop there. In some ways, it kind of just gets started in phase two, which is let's see how it goes. Let's see what our clients think. And let's see if this is something somebody we want to start promoting and investing more energy into and sending more business their way.
When we could expect some tours for shore excursions?
Very good question. I guess there's a lot happening in that phase. And we've actually been selling shore excursions completely on the down low for probably 18 months now, where we haven't really kind of created a great search filter, but we had the tours on the platform, and we had agents booking shore excursions for their clients through Project Expedition. So we kind of, the hard work of kind of making sure we're finding the right operators that can run a shore excursion, we've been testing out for a while now. And the hard bit is really sort of making sure operators can work with the different kind of complexities of a shore excursion, in that it has to start and finish in a cruise port. It has to finish on time. It's got to have a batch ship guarantee. What happens when the cruise kind of skips port because of weather? So we've been working on that behind the scenes. But one of our 2020 projects that we actually had kind of in January, and probably the only project that saw through didn't kind of come up, was to build a proper robust shore excursion search platform, which we actually only announced a few weeks ago in kind of a testing mode at the moment. So we've created a platform where you can now go on Project Expedition, type in the name of your cruise ship or the cruise line. We'll show you the departure dates. You pick that, and then we just, within those two clicks, give you the whole itinerary. So the ports the ship's going to, the arrival date and time, the departure date and time, and then within that, show you the shore excursions we have available. And these shore excursions come with that cruise-friendly refund policy, so if the ship does skip port, obviously your clients wouldn't make it before, and it's no fault of their own, so they get a refund. A back-to-ship guarantee, which is essentially giving you the peace of mind, knowing that if the client does miss the ship, to the fault of the operator or the guide, basically us, then we pay to get to the next port. Fortunately, that's never happened in the 18 months we've been selling shore excursions, but you've got that peace of mind, because I think Laura mentioned at the very beginning the cruise line monopoly. Like, what are they going to tell you? And obviously, it's a competitive industry, and we know that the cruise line, they want you to book through them. But we think we've got a very strong value proposition for advisors. We've got a very different selection of shore excursions than what the cruise line offers, particularly around group sizes, like the small group experience, up to about 15 people, the private experience that we can customize, we can kind of work to put those really unique experiences together. And typically our pricing is very competitive, if not better, than what you see through some of the other resellers as well. So we're super excited for that platform. We're taking a long view on cruising. We've worked hard on this platform for last year. We've announced it so that you know we're here for you in that regard. We're gathering lots of feedback right now. We want to make the search platform kind of industry leading. And the only way we're going to do that is by gathering feedback from advisors. So it's going to be a few months before cruising picks up, but we're going to be ready, and we're very excited to be able to support our clients with that new vertical.
How many do we have now, Rob? Wow. What's the total?
Just over 3,000 short excursions. So there's a lot. And that includes river ports as well. So we really just built on top of the inventory we had, utilized a lot of the relationships, but just added those enhanced terms and giving you a quick look. Very excited. we've been wanting to get kind of more serious in this space for some time. And if there's any silver lining from 2020, is that we had the time internally to actually properly build this platform out. So very excited.
Well, and one of the things I was thinking about when we were talking about all these things is that I have a newly 15-year-old grandson and 15-year-old grandson, and he, you know, his favorite things list kind of has changed from month to month about what he likes to eat or where he likes to go out to eat or what he likes to wear, what he likes to listen to. It's his new favorite thing. And likewise with Project Expedition, as I've traveled with you over the past few years, you know, it's like, oh, this is my favorite thing about Project. No, this is my favorite thing. Well, my kind of latest in the series is your wish list. And my clients have come to just love, and I just think it's worth mentioning for the folks who are listening, because, you know, this is something your travel agent can send you. They can send you a laundry list of either based on your interest or what you like to do, based on what they've had great feedback from other clients. And they can send you this big, long wish list. And then you can go through and say, I love 1, 6, 7, and 12. Were you drinking on number 8 thinking I would like that? Or, you know, and the family that I was talking about that I was doing this pretty big Paris tour, they were like, you know, she said, we sat down and looked at it. And we were like, oh my gosh, she's offered us everything from private museum tours to going to the flea markets to baking loaves of French bread and with a cheese store right next door to learning how to play boulets, you know, marbles and drink wine. They just absolutely love that variety of it. So I think that's, you know, that's another thing that's kind of come out of this is that you've got these, your laundry list has, you know, expanded. And, you know, I don't know if you want to speak to those wish lists at all, but I think they're incredible benefits for our clients.
Well, I think first and foremost, we got to congratulate you, Laura, because you said you were vice president of the fan club, but you've now been promoted to president.
Oh, there are going to be a lot of mad people because they think they're president.
But there's only one person that sent us a mug, Laura.
That's fantastic. Yeah, no, the wish lists are super popular. The referral links have also been very popular. I think the common denominator there is, as an advisor, you can send a link to your client to either a specific tour page, an attraction, or a destination page, and anything that's booked will, you know, be linked to your account, so that we know who you know. For us internally, we know who the client's travel advisor is, which helps kind of make that, you know, tie that together. So if clients are booking things on their own, we know that you're the advisor, you're there for support. If, you know, there's questions or follow-up things that we know that the advisor should be dealing with. So just to make it easier on the client. And then of course, the wish list operates the same way. So it's a great way for you to curate tours and suggestions for your client and just send them that list. That same kind of functionality is really kind of also the basis of the Shore Excursion platform that Rob was mentioning. So you can actually import your cruise itinerary and then select Shore Excursions in each port of call. So all those options automatically import, and then you can choose the Shore Excursions that your clients might want to do in each port. And then you can just share that whole list with your clients. So you can just say, you know, hey client, here's your whole itinerary with each port that you're going to visit. And here are the excursions that I would recommend, that you do in each port. And then those can just all be booked and kind of one easy go. So it's really just kind of like an ongoing, evolution of, feedback, as we've mentioned several times tonight, is just, you know, how can we take the feedback and make your job as efficient as possible to service your clients as well as possible.
Well, unfortunately, as vice president of your fan club, we have to wind up. So that's our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Please like our Facebook page, rate us, and be sure to tell your friends about us. You can find our previous episodes on the podcast page at outlandertravel.com, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Rob and Jeremy, thanks a million for joining us. It's been a great night.
Thanks for having us.
On behalf of Donna, Sandy, George, Lindsay, and myself, Laura, thanks for joining us this week. Gotta fly.